this on Snelling.
Sandy, are you ready to go with your bill?
No.
Okay.
As long as Nick Riley's here.
Yep, he is.
You're down?
Okay,
let's try it.
I'm a good blind sight reader.
Okay. Okay. Good afternoon. I'll call to order the meeting of the State Government Budget Division for March 11, 2009. Let the record reflect we have a quorum present. We have two bills on the agenda today. The first one is Senate File 319, State Bond Finance Property Sales Proceeds Distribution Modification. Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. The purpose of the Library Construction Grant Program was to maintain rural geographic access, sparsity aid, to provide seamless services across locally funded systems, to provide our collections for interlibrary, sorry about that. Hebrew that came out right there. Provide archival collections for interlibrary loan. Provide funds for innovation and reduce government spending through automation and slow redesign. Library construction grants are subject to this Minnesota statute and gives the state permanent equity interest in a local unit of government's property into perpetuity. When property is sold, the state determines the percent ownership in the property. Ms. Nemitz, the library director for Ramsey County, can give you some examples.
Sure. Welcome to the Budget Division. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Senator Betzold. My name is Susan Nemitz. I'm the director of the Ramsey County Library System. Ramsey County, like a lot of libraries, are really experiencing a lot of growth in use, but also a lot of change in the way in which libraries are used. And we don't necessarily have the corresponding funding. So one of the things that Ramsey County's been doing is really investing in the infrastructure of our library system to change it towards a technology-based library. The state has this wonderful, terrific, magnificent program called the State Library Construction Grant Program. It was developed in the 1990s to provide accessibility grants for library buildings. So library buildings could be more accessible to the physically disabled. But the grant programs expanded into more of an innovation grant program. In 1996, the Ramsey County Library in North St. Paul got a small grant to create an accessible drinking fountain. In 2005, Ramsey County went to sell the old building. And I just want to talk a little bit about why they were selling the building. We had about an 8,000-square-foot building with declining use. And we went into a partnership with the city of North St. Paul, where we went to about a 2,600-square-foot building, significantly smaller. But we reduced the operating costs on that particular facility to one-third of their former operating costs. It was a great partnership between the county and the city. And the consequence of that change has been that library use in the new facility has far exceeded library use in the old facility. It was a great example of working together collaboratively with other units of government to save money for the taxpayers. The problem is that when we went to sell the old library in North St. Paul, we discovered, and maybe I should have known this, but because we had gotten the library construction grant in the past, that the state had partial ownership in that building. And in fact, we had to pay back twice the amount the state gave us for those drinking fountains in order to sell the building. This permanent equity interest, I believe, really creates barriers for libraries to go for this program and creates barriers to create the kind of changes we need to see in library facilities. I did look up the grants that have been going to libraries through the Library Construction Grant Program, and again, it's a great program. But we have almost 100 libraries across the state of Minnesota that now are partially owned by the state, and they were local buildings. I would ask that you would support the amendment to Minnesota Statute 16B. What it does is it says that local units of government do have a responsibility to the state taxpayers when they get some sort of construction grant through the bonding system, but it limits that obligation to the life of the bonds rather than creates this permanent ownership into perpetuity.
Ms. Nemitz, you said an amendment to 16B. It looks like this.
It's 16A.695 sub 3.
That's
it's the bill.
Yes, the bill there.
Thank you,
Mr. Chairman.
Pappas.
Ms. Nemitz did a much better job at explaining the situation.
Okay. Do you have anything further, Senator Pappas? Okay. Is there anybody else who's here who wants to be heard on Senate File 319? Senator Pappas, this would probably not be appropriate for the omnibus state government budget bill. So it probably would have to go on its own. I don't know if that means it marries up with the capital investment bill or whether it just can be taken up on the floor. I don't know. And I was just consulting with Mr. Botter on whether or not dealing with capital investments, does it have to be a House file or not? He didn't seem to think so, but it may be something you want to check out down the road because you're affecting the distribution of funds.
Well, unfortunately, the capital investment bill was passed out of finance yesterday.
Right.
So, but I think that if this goes as a separate bill, full finance, yeah. We could add it on the floor.
That's what I'm thinking. You know, you could probably marry it up at some point. It's gone through the process and just talked to Senator Langseth, and at some point, if it's appropriate for that bill or traveling separately, but I don't think you want this as part of the omnibus budget bill. So anyway, it gets moving, frankly, faster.
Mr. Chairman, the House file is also traveling on its own.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. So is there discussion? Senator Olsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Pappas, I shouldn't be the one to point this out, but at 1.11, is there a better word than bettered? I mean, like improved or something? It just doesn't seem like it raises to
bettered.
It's a finance
bettered
term.
Probably a definition for bettered.
Is it really?
Well, better. I mean,
okay.
We just use
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Mr. Botter, could you?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Olsen, I'd also point out if you look at the existing language and some of the other lines in the bill, I think this is done to eliminate confusion. Better it is used on line 1.14 and 1.17, 1.20. So just to eliminate confusion.
Okay. Thanks.
There's probably a gooder way to say it, but I can't think of it. Okay. Any other discussion? If not, Senator Pappas moves that Senate File 319 be recommended to pass to the Finance Committee. Is there discussion on that motion? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Pappas. And the other bill that we have today is Senate File 935, Senator Rest. This is dealing with a constitutional amendment to incur public debt for public information technology systems. And this bill also, if it goes, would have to go on its own separately because of the only Senate rules, but the proposed change to the joint rules that the Senate voted on earlier this week. So, Senator Rest, how?
Do you want to have that?
Oh, we do have a handout
first?
Here, and we have a present or some.
These comments from those folks first.
Was this from who?
I can go down there, but.
Yeah, MMB, or Department of Finance, apparently has some background information on lease purchase financing options, and so if we could get them up here to be here. Yeah, they're there. Welcome back to Budget Division. Please identify yourself for the record again.
Mr. Chair, my name is Jim Showalter, State Budget Director for the record. With me is Reed, Executive Budget Officer, Kathy Cardell, Assistant Commissioner. Should we start a presentation?
Yeah, go ahead. We've got the handout here, and we need some background on the lease purchase financing overview so we could kind of put that in the context of Senator Rust's bill. So.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What we'd like
Mr. Chair, could we ask the witnesses to pull the microphone?
Yeah,
we got quite a bit of interference.
We've got some competition here today, so.
Yes, there is, Mr. Chair. Is this better?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, very good. What we'd like to talk about and help explain are the financing options on information technology and specifically some of the recommendations that were included in the governor's budget. We had a request from the committee to explain some of the options similar to a discussion that we held with the State Government Committee on the House side. And to start with, They're in the governor's budget. You'll remember there's two major projects that are financed with lease purchasing financing model. That includes the replacement of the state accounting system and the continuation and completion of integrated tax system. Lease purchasing is one of several financing tools, but for a number of reasons, we felt like this was made sense, but want to help explain the other options and the reasons for why the budget recommendations came out as they did. So the first slide just highlights lease purchasing financing. It's a common financing model where investors provide upfront cash for an information technology system in exchange for a series of lease payments. Again, upfront cash, series of payments over a period of years. It is something that is common. We do it actually in the state of Minnesota for other programs. Some other states have done it for other IT systems. However, within this committee or any of the other committees, we haven't done it, haven't used this tool for information technology financing. So it is a new approach towards information technology financing to spread out the costs over a period of time, try to match those with some of the benefits that a large investment would make.
And Mr. Showalter, we have in this division looked at that option for MAPS, the integrated tax system, and so forth. So I think we're familiar with where the costs are spread out over the next 10 years on that option. So go ahead.
Very good. Then I will continue on to the next slide, which is a quick look at some of the financing tools and comparing them. On a quick advertisement on behalf of our department, we typically prefer upfront payments for some of these kinds of investments. So, you know, the gold standard is an appropriation cash by the system. You have the best financing options. You have the best control of the project, and you really don't have any financing costs over time. However, if you're going to start looking at spreading those costs over time, these are some of the options that other states or other entities have. That includes the general obligation bonds, which isn't applicable in Minnesota simply because it doesn't pass the constitutional test that we can get into a little bit later. But our reading, our bond council's advice, consistent over time, has been that the Constitution, as it currently stands, does not allow information technology general obligation bonds. Revenue bonds can be an option for some systems, but for some of the core technology systems of the state, there's no non-tax revenue that really goes with it. There's not a set of fees that go with the MAP system or the integrated tax system. So as a result, while you might be able to use that for a vehicle services system, as the legislature did last year, that is not such an easy option for some of these core systems. I should emphasize again, it's a non-tax fee. It's a non-tax kind of revenue stream. If it became if it was coming originally from a tax, then it would look like a general obligation bond, and then you run into the same constitutional prohibitions that I started with.
Okay.
Lease purchase, continuing on to the left, is an option that is, and Assistant Commissioner Cardell will talk more about it, as will Ms. Reed. But basically, you still use the financing markets to access capital. You still use a competitive bid process to get the money, and then you still have state control to manage the project. It is really recommended for core systems, things that are not an appropriate tool for every IT project, but certainly for some of the core enterprise-wide information systems, this might be an option. Lastly is vendor financing, and I know you've also heard about some of those options in the past where the vendor not only delivers the service but pays for it up front and then expects some payment over time. That, of course, is also an option, but it does tend to negate some of the financing advantages that the state has. It also cedes some of the control over the project to the vendors.
Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Abby Reed. I'm a budget officer at Minnesota Management and Budget.
Hey,
turning to the next slide, how this would work. In this case, with lease purchase financing, private investors would purchase certificates of participation, and then in return, they would receive a fixed rate of return. And so this is how the state receives the upfront capital we would need to purchase a system, and then we, in exchange for that, pay the fixed lease payments to the investors. this lease purchase financing is not secured by an asset, so it's not like a car loan or other things you think of when you think of lease. In this case, the arrangement is entirely backed by the amounts the state would appropriate from time to time for the repayment of the lease arrangement. And so unlike GO bonds, it would not be backed by the full faith and credit, and therefore it's slightly riskier for investors who would demand slightly higher interest rates because of that.
And this is the lease purchase option?
Yes. Gotcha. This is the option recommended in the governor's budget for those two projects.
Okay.
Turning to the next slide, we looked into some other states' experiences with lease purchase financing. And actually, the National Association of State Chief Information Officers issued a report in 2008. It's actually an update of a prior report that shows that states are using this actually increasingly in recent years to finance IT projects. Mm-hmm. They found in their survey that 19 states use lease financing for technology, with at least 6 states using this kind of certificates of participation model for their projects. And as the next slide shows, two specific states we looked at were Ohio and Kentucky. Ohio has lease purchase financed a major ERP system with the tax-exempt certificates of participation, and they did use the same 10-year time horizon proposed in the governor's budget. Kentucky has actually financed several systems, including personnel, tax, emergency communication, and they also use the tax-exempt lease purchase, although they had a range of maturities from 7 to 10 years. And Minnesota has actually, as Mr. Showalter said, used this lease purchase financing for other non-technology projects, including the lease purchase of the Freeman and Anderson buildings and then the BCA building in Bemidji. We've also looked at a few other states closer, including Wisconsin and North Dakota, that have used similar financing.
Mr. Chair? Yes, sir, I'll
see. Mr. Chair, Ms. Reed, do you know if Kentucky, when they looked at that emergency communication, was that like an 800 megahertz radio system, or do you know anything on the background on that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Olsen, we are not positive what exactly the project was. We do know they described it as emergency communication.
Mr. Chair, if you get a chance, could you just send me an email or something on that? Because
we could certainly follow up.
Thanks. Yes,
appreciate it. Thank you. Go ahead. Sir Probley.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and Ms. Reed. You know, you've stated that the interest rate on lease purchase agreements is higher than GO bonds. Do you know what kind of difference there is there? Or, you know, I know it varies with the bond market, but does this kind of interest rate follow the bond market? Or
it looks like 5% if I'm reading it. Yes.
Mr. Chairman and Senator, my name is Kathy Cardell, and I'm the Assistant Commissioner for Treasury and Debt Management at MMB, and I'll be happy to answer your question. As the Chairman pointed out, when we were looking at this option for the Governor's budget back in December, we estimated a 5% interest rate, which was based on where market conditions were at that time. In today's market, I would suspect it would be a little bit lower. It was interesting. I just saw a general obligation bond issue for another state comparably rated that sold yesterday. Their interest rate was a 4.21. So I would estimate that something like this, a shorter maturity, would probably be somewhere in a comparable range to that, 4.20 to 4.50. But you're absolutely right. It does change. It does follow the market, and it does vary.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, so you haven't gotten to slide 7 yet, but I suspect that would change those numbers there.
Mr. Chairman, okay. It certainly would. I'm glad to say that I believe this is still a conservative interest rate estimate.
And Mr. Chair, members of the committee, while it might change from day to day what interest rate we would expect to get when we would go to market with these lease purchase arrangements, the governor's recommended budget would still book a conservative 5%. The reason for that is the entire project is structured around the amount of the interest booked in there. So if, say, from day to day the interest rates change and we ended up at a much higher interest rate, that would then reduce the amount available for the project. And so the idea is to book a number in the budget and leave it as that, and so we would later, should we go to market with an appropriation or with a lease purchase arrangement that ends up coming in at a lower interest rate, then the appropriations could be adjusted later. But you won't know until you go to market, and therefore need to have a relatively conservative estimate to make sure you can get the project done.
The reason why we, you know, wanted to be, you know, come back and discuss this part again is in the context of Senator Rust's bill, which would allow for, which deals with the constitutional issues, which Mr. Showalter pointed out we cannot do on his point on the third slide. You indicated that you'd have a more discussion on that. Can you just talk a little bit more about what we can and cannot do under the Constitution and why IT cannot be used for that purpose?
Mr. Chairman and members, the bond council opinion has, I can't remember if it was Mr. Showalter or Ms. Reed, must have been Mr. Showalter, consistently over the years, when you look at the Constitution, it talks about the acquisition and betterment of public land and buildings. So their opinion has consistently been that technology and other equipment that is related to the acquisition and construction of public land and buildings in order to make that building functional may be financed with general obligation bonds. However, systems such as MAPS or the integrated tax system cannot.
Because they're not part of a building.
Correct.
Or parking lots are not a part of a building, I guess. Okay.
But Mr. Chairman, a parking lot that was adjacent, you know, if you're building a new building, I think that bond council would find it reasonable to assume that you might need to provide adjacent parking.
Now, with you know, just going back to the lease purchase financing, there's always a worry anytime you lease anything that you're going to be making the payments longer than the lifespan of the item that you're leasing, whether it's an automobile or technology. How do we know when we're talking about this area that we're going to be able to still use the products that we're leasing, you know, during the time period we're making the payments?
Mr. Chair, good question, and certainly one that strikes to some of our concerns over how long you spread the payments. The 10-year figure, I think, is a reasonable one, given the magnitude of the project, given the magnitude of the system. The current MAPS accounting system has been around for roughly 15 years. So it is, I think, likely that this replacement system or the integrated tax system would be around longer than the costs have been spread. If one were to look at Senator Rust's bill, if it were to be enacted, the voters were to enact a constitutional change, and so several years down the road, IT financing could be accessed through GO bonds. We would still strongly recommend that those funds would be paid back within about a 10-year period so that IT projects would continue to have a useful life roughly equal to or perhaps even longer than the repayment schedule. So under all circumstances, I think we would want to make sure that 10-year time frame is for really significant enterprise-wide systems and not lengthen the repayment, even though it might lessen the annual costs a little bit.
Would that be the 10-year cycle? Would that be true for most IT areas? I mean, you know, software has about a 1-year lifespan, it seems, these days, you know, but for other IT, is 10 years a good assumption?
Mr. Chair, I could defer to Office of Enterprise Technology to answer some of those types of questions, but certainly we would not ever suggest that, you know, regular software, the latest version of Outlook, should be financed on a 10-year basis. It is only for significant infrastructure systems that probably will need a long life cycle in order to have a reasonable repayment.
Okay. Did you finish your presentation here before we get to the rest bill, or do you have anything further you want to bring to our attention?
Mr. Chair, members, the next slide just shows the breakdown of the proposed projects. I think you've seen it before.
Right.
And then the last slide just summarizes the benefits and drawbacks and the bottom line for the recommendation for lease purchase financing.
Mr. Chair, I think what Senator Rust's bill and the governor's proposal both are trying to do is make sure that the benefits of a technology system match some of the costs so that they spread over time and that the upfront cost isn't become prohibitive We know that the state needs some of these technology advancements and are trying to find ways to make sure that it's accessible. The state certainly has been able to put in money for technology. 2 years ago, we put in roughly $90 million for schools, in computers in school districts. Last year, we did a revenue bond issue with the driver and vehicle services, which was around $60 million. It's not like we don't know that technology isn't expensive. It's just very difficult sometimes to always manage it within the committee targets or within the accessible funds for any given project.
And for the benefit of the members, Monday we will have on our agenda the state government budget bill, which includes the recommendations of the governor, including this particular area. So we'll be seeing this again very soon. So any questions? Sarah Publi.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, I assume that this presentation has been made in support of Senator Ress's bill. But as I read over the proposed amendment, now this pertains to the bill, Mr. Chair, so if this isn't appropriate here, well, you can let me know. But, you know, I mean, it seems to me, like the constitutional amendment that passed last year, it had different groups behind it with a lot of money. You know, if I were to, you know, not receive any education, I think I'd vote for this on the basis of what you've already presented to me. But I think if I just walked into the voting booth and saw this there without any effort to educate us as members of the public, I'm not sure I would vote for it. I guess, you know, so I guess my question is there a plan to get information to the public that lets them know what this is about so that you might stand a chance of passing it?
Well, let's get Senator Rust up. If there's no questions of the witnesses, we'll get Senator Rust up and she can present her bill and find that out. We wanted to put in the context so you could see what the options were. As we noted, right now, revenue bonds or general obligation bonds are not permitted for financing technology, and that's what the bill that we have before us, I think, would propose to do. Senator Rust.
Mr. Chairman, to answer Senator Kubley's question, I would take this issue directly to the League of Women Voters, for one thing. We have an extensive network across the state. And encourage them to, if not to support its passage, to support education of Minnesota voters on what this would do. And I recall that in the past we had one constitutional amendment that allowed six-person juries, and I don't recall that there was any big swell of information that went out to the voters, but most people read it, made sense, they voted for it, and it passed. And that was a, you know, that was a cost-cutting measure. Maybe Senator Betzel, maybe the chair remembers when that was. But there have been constitutional amendments that do not have, you know, a big PR component to them, but that are just presented as a common sense change to the Constitution, which has been adopted. I think we did the same thing, really, although maybe there's a little bit more PR on establishing the appellate court, which we did not have, and which was passed by constitutional amendment. Maybe there's a little bit more information about that, but I don't think much.
I recall a lot of, at least within my professional circles, I remember a lot of press, but of course, I also remember there was a constitutional amendment, so the Minnesota Senate would not have to confirm notaries, and the voters voted that down, so that's why we have to confirm notaries, even though nobody pays attention to it. So,
well, Mr. Chair.
Sarah Kubley.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Rest. You know, I think that, you know, maybe the difference, you know, certainly the appellate court would cost something, although it may not have said that in the amendment, I'm not sure. But here, I think, you know, when you're telling people that they will incur more debt as a state, I think that would deter some people from voting for it, you know, just because they're not sure, you know, public information technology systems. I don't know if that relays the information that people need to vote for something or not. I guess, you know, I'm just concerned that it get a fair hearing, I guess, within the public.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Kubley, I thank you for that. And maybe I do have one small amendment, but it does not but I think your point is well taken, so that the question is put so that it does not seem to imply that we're going deeper into debt for something new, as opposed to just providing I want to make sure I don't call it lend lease purchase financing. I've just been reading a book about Franklin Roosevelt, so lease purchase financing. That we state the question accurately, and that like lease purchase financing is a tool. So too would be would the state being able to issue GO bonds for these sophisticated technology systems be an appropriate opportunity in them for the bonding bill.
Well, Mr. Chair and Senator Rest, I think that would be a helpful change, I guess, because it lets them know that you're going to be making payments anyway, but then you actually end up with something for what you're leasing, and I think that's that would be a helpful change myself. You know, I think it would relay more of what the intent is.
The one amendment I have in the question and on line 2.5 is to change the word public to state to indicate that we're not really looking at local governments being able to come to the state for GO bonds to do something like build cable systems. That's not what this is intended to be. That would be a direct competition with the private sector.
Mr.
So
Chairman.
Not intending to do that. So, Mr. Chairman, that would be my an author's amendment to lines 2.5
sure.
and 2.13.
2.13, okay.
And 2.13, okay. So where it says on 2.5 and 2.13 where it says public, you want to change that. Well, actually, now on 2.13 public appears a couple of places, so referring to
public debt to pay for state information.
Second public on
2.13. Yes, the second public.
Okay.
Yes.
Word public on 2.5, strike public and put state. 2.13, delete the second public and put state. That's your motion.
That would be my motion.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. The amendment's adopted. So, do you think we need a value statement on?
I'm all for value statements on constitutional amendments, as you know, Mr. Chairman. And I don't know where we would put that, but I think it's something like that Senator Kubley is suggesting, something like to provide an additional financing tool or something. I don't know if tool is the right word to go in a constitutional question, but maybe Mr. Bodern could help me out there.
For the benefit of the members, and Sarah Limerick and I are both on Judiciary Committee, we spent a lot of time in Judiciary Committee on the Judicial Retentions Bill that Senator Rust is carrying, because it had the constitutional question in there, and it had the phrase in there, in order to protect the impartiality.
Preserve the impartiality of the judiciary.
And we wondered whether it was appropriate to put a value statement in there or not, and so we messed it up so much that we can't even.
Mr. Chairman, I think Senator Kubley's point here is that it is more of a, it does answer the question, like, why, and I think, and I'm going to go back, as I indicated in the Judiciary Committee on the Judicial Selection Bill, I'm going to go back and revisit the question, because I think you do need to, or I do think it's proper to at least give a reason why you even have the question on the ballot. And I don't know what to add here that might satisfy this committee, but I'm certainly sensitive to Senator Kubley's point. And I don't know if Mr. Bodern can help. I don't think it has to be anywhere but in the question, however.
Well, I don't think just explaining the fact that we're doing this because the Constitution doesn't permit it, I don't think quite gets you there either. So, right?
No, I, so, yes.
But that's the reason why we're doing it.
Yes.
Okay. Senator Olsen, I don't know, Mr. Bodden, you don't have anything to offer, do you?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure if it addresses the reason why. You could condense the question a little bit. You could say that the phrase incur public debt is redundant once you say issue bonds, so that you, on line 2.13, you could delete and incur public debt to pay and insert to provide. So the sentence would read, shall the Constitution be amended to permit the state to issue bonds to provide for state public or for state information systems, et cetera. That might be a slight improvement. I don't know.
I think that does tighten it up a bit.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Bodern, Senator Kubley, I would like to have that amendment.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Senator Estes moved the amendment. Senator Kubley.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Estes, I guess I'd like to see something in there that says that it allows to permit the state to issue bonds for lease, purchase, state information technology, something to that effect.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Kubley, the lease purchase is a different financial tool than this one would be.
I'm sorry.
And we don't need a constitutional amendment to do
that. I thought these two were in agreement.
We don't need that for that.
Okay.
We're looking at lease purchase because the Constitution doesn't allow us to do this.
Right.
This bill would allow
this
us
is just
to do
another
that.
Tool in addition to lease purchase because what it would do is the source of the money. And they indicated, finance indicated that they would still, even if they did have the tool to recommend GO bonds, they would still have the intention of paying them off within 10 years. What I think this would do would be able, they would be able to estimate on a given proposal whether to recommend using GO bonds or recommend using lease purchase financing as to which would be the best deal for a particular kind of project and what the additional cost would be and if the debt service would be less under a GO bond that even at that they intended to pay off in 10 years, well then I would assume that they would go for the better deal.
Cash is always better, but we don't have
cash is better, but we run into a question. We run into a problem with our priorities for other things, and then we tend to short shrift or underfund the request for technology, which, if you don't do it all at once, has – we ran into that problem a couple of years ago. If you don't do it all at once, you can't do it. And you have to have enough wiggle room in those kinds of proposals to build on the experience of the design part of it and et cetera. And so cash is an issue.
Yeah. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I do. Oh.
Yeah, so your motion was on page 2, line 13. To delete the words and incur public debt to pay and insert the words to provide. Is there a discussion on that motion?
Well, you want to take out four, too.
To provide four?
And incur public debt to pay for, and instead of that, to issue
bonds
to provide.
Four.
Okay. And to provide for state
technology systems. Yes. So repeating that, delete on 2.13, delete and incur public debt to pay, and insert the words to provide. Mm-hmm. It's a discussion on that motion. Hearing none of those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Is there anybody else who's here who wants to be heard on Senate File 935 as amended?
Mr. Chairman, I would like to invite OET to come forward.
Okay, sure.
We have a
mostly to, you know, kind of give information from sure. their point of view about what this additional tool would allow them to do that they can't do now.
Mr. Lally, Mr. Conlon, welcome back. Please identify yourselves again for the record.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Gopal Khanna. I'm the Chief Information Officer for the state of Minnesota. I'm here representing Office of Enterprise Technology, the state's lead agency responsible for guiding, directing, and managing IT assets and servicing our state agencies as well as other government entities. I have here along with me my associate, John Lally, who's Director of Planning and Portfolio Management as well. And just by way of background, since the establishment of OET in 2005, as an agency, we've been focusing in three major areas. All our activities are targeted in those three domains. First one is optimizing our existing IT assets across enterprise and making them try to do more with what we have or with less. Second objective is to define the future. We know very well, and we've talked about it on several occasions, that the government operations depends upon smooth, secure, and reliable operation of digital infrastructure of government. And there's more and more dependency on it, and therefore it is utterly important for us to look back and see what our future needs to be and how we need to get our government to become more efficient, transparent, effective, and citizen-centric through use of information technology. Third activity is focused on building and putting in place all the practices, all the transitional activities that need to be activated so we can operationalize that future vision and work with you and our colleagues across state government to come up with a coherent enterprise approach. And that would include things like financing models and options and governance structure and best practices and security and an assortment of all the tools that are needed to do the transition effectively. Although I'm not here to either support or not support Senator Rest's bill, I certainly appreciate the opportunity to be here to talk about information technology and what we are doing and how your work today impacts us and what we can and how we can be of help and answer your questions.
Well, and of course, the question that I asked a little earlier, and maybe you are the better one to answer it, that if we're not going to be able to pay cash to buy some new IT, and we're looking at buying it over a period of time, putting on the credit card, whether it's by bonding or by leasing, you do want to make sure that you're not going to be paying for something after the expected life cycle of whatever it is you're buying, whether it's IT or anything else. So what assurances do we have that either with Senator Rest's proposal or with what we heard from MMB that we're going to be able to continue to use the whatever we're buying in the IT area after the 10-year period?
Mr. Chairman, your point is well taken, and we really appreciate our working with MMB because they're in the best position to guide us as to what's the best instrument or a combination thereof. Last year, Office of Enterprise Technology, in collaboration and conjunction with MMB, put together a document called the IT Alternate Funding Strategies document, which brings forth about 9 different approaches to funding technology initiatives going forward. And MMB is best positioned to define as to what's the best way. To give you an example, right now we are looking at the governor's initiative for data center consolidation, and it's financed through the way it has been structured is the best way going forward for us. So we leave that discretion to our workings with MMB to establish what's the best vehicle for us to use.
I kind of get the difference between what's called hardware and what's called software, but with an IT area, aren't there some things that could be, one or the other, and some things just might not have that 10-year life cycle if we're going to be paying for it. Are we going to be absolutely sure that when we lease something or bond for it or whatever for 10 years, that it's actually going to be usable for at least 10 years.
Mr. Chairman, you're absolutely right, and that's the reason why we have a set of 9 different ways to fund various technology elements or components, and you're absolutely right. There are hardware layers, software layers, there's a network layer, and security layer, and they all combined together produce the best solution, and there might be opportunities to use bonding in certain areas, while there might be lease arrangement for another, and third might be just through general fund and just, as you said, pay through cash. So that's something that our governance structure allows us to do, to be thoughtful, to work with MMB, to come up with the best solution, because there's no way to say there's only one way and define it entirely, but the key is to allow the flexibility so that from a policy perspective and from program execution perspective, we can make the right choices and be thoughtful about it, and determine that it is within the 10-year framework that we are talking about right now today.
Any question? Mr. Lally, do
yes.
you have something?
Mr. Chairman, John Lally from the Office of Technology. I think there are some practical controls over the use of this tool. Everybody agrees that this is a rapier, not a broadsword, that you want to bring into the financing world. The markets themselves will reflect a realistic approach on whether a piece of software is an enterprise software tool with the appropriate length of time for financing versus one that may be more transient and would not be worth using something like bonding as a funding mechanism. And I think the practical discussions we've had with MMB in preparation of the report last year went through a lot of those kinds of distinctions, and they're fairly clear when you get to a particular instance. The integrated tax system, for example, is a system that has a long life expectancy. Certainly a statewide accounting system has a long life expectancy. I wouldn't suggest anybody was in the right mind if they were going to fund an upgrade to an email system with a life expectancy of 2 or 3 years as a version, that would be an appropriate candidate.
You couldn't sell those parts, right?
No, you couldn't. The market couldn't would recognize that. It would not do those. So I think the issue is legitimate. I think we have always supported, and as have Department of Finance and now MMB, supported the idea that this is a tool that has to be used very judiciously. But we do have some practical guidelines to help us in administering that tool.
Any questions of OET on this bill as it relates to Senator Rust's issue? Senator Rust, did you have anything further?
No, sir.
Anybody else who wants to be heard on SFL 935 as amended? Well, Senator Rust, then.
Mr. Chairman, then I would move that Senate file 935 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the full committee.
Senator Rust moves that Senate file 935 as amended be recommended to pass be referred to the committee on finance. Is there a discussion on that motion? Hearing none, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, motion prevails. Members, that concludes today's agenda. As I indicated earlier, on Monday we will have the governor's state budget bill before us. I don't know that we'll complete it in one hearing, but we will start reviewing to understand what the governor's proposals are. Wednesday, we will have the Department of Finance or Minnesota Management Budget, whichever you wish to call them. And they have not been in for their department presentation, so we'll have them in. So that's coming up. So meeting adjourned. Thank you.
Okay.